Good morning, everybody. 2 weeks ago, we began our series speaking about the legendary life of the Vilna Gaon. Last week, we followed up and spoke about his most prominent student, Reb Chaim Volozhiner. The sons of the Vilna Gaon claimed that Reb Chaim Volozhiner was the star disciple of their father. And this week, we're going to focus on another very important disciple of the Vilna Gaon, and that was a towering giant by the name of Reb Yisrael Mishklov. I'm sure many have never heard of him, but he was actually a very important personality in the lifetime of the Vilna Gaon, as we will see. So by way of introduction, let's hear a little bit about the way he is described, the way he's memorialized by the greats of his time, and get an appreciation a little bit about what his life was, and then we'll get more into the details. So Reb Yisrael Mishklov, his friend said about him the following. The Av Bezdin in Vilna wrote about him. Harav HaMa'or HaGadol. He was the great luminary. HaCharif VeHabaki. He was the sharp and encyclopedic mind. HaMafursam, that everybody knew about, everybody had heard of him, Marena Harav Yisrael. Hayelo Shem B'Chachamim, he had a name amongst all the giants of the generation, Umuchzak L'Gavar Chacham, everybody considered him to be a wise man. Be'oz, he was a powerful leader, not just a wise individual, but he was a powerful leader. V'Yiras Hashem Kalayamim, his Yiras Shamayim, his fear of God was palpable, it was something that everybody noticed. There were others who wrote about him the following. Ish Pela Haya Reb Yisrael Mishklov Zatzal. He was an unusual, he was an outstanding individual. Echad Umiyuchad Bedoru. Listen to this description. They say about him that he was an Echad Umiyuchad Bedoru. He was unparalleled in his generation. Echad Umiyuchad Bedorus Rabim. Not just was he unparalleled in his own generation, but even if you put it in the context of many generations, his contemporaries felt that he was somebody who outshined many greats of many generations. Why was that? You had the Vilna Gaon, so how can they be so enamored by Rabbi Yisrael Mishklov if they lived in the times of the Vilna Gaon? So the answer was, because he was an Ish Rav Tzdadim. He was a man of many different dimensions. V'Rav Gvanim Me'en Kamo. He had so many different facets to his personality, so many things he was involved in. So the Vilna Gaon, as we spoke about 2 weeks ago, was a towering giant. He was a genius. He knew everything inside, outside, backwards and forwards. That was the Vilna Gaon. But he was very one-dimensional in some respects. I don't mean that in a negative way. He focused all of his attention on learning Torah, and that was it. In fact, the Dubna Magid, who was a contemporary of the Vilna Gaon, and used to often come and visit the Vilna Gaon by the request of the Vilna Gaon himself, he would give him Musar. So one of the Musar Shmuzim that he gave to the Vilna Gaon was, it's not a kunst for you to sit in your library by yourself with the shutters closed and never violate an Aveira and be an Avad Hashem. That's easy. So the Vilna Gaon said back to him, he said, I'm not a kunstmacher. I'm not here in the world to try to outsmart anybody else. I'm here in the world to serve the Ribono Shel Olam, and that's what I do. And therefore the Vilna Gaon's life was spent very much on his own. And he studied Torah on his own, and he lived up in his attic, and he studied with his students together, and he gave over a lot to them. His Talmidim took a little bit of a different approach. Obviously, everybody has their own reason why they were created. Reb Chaim Volozhiner's approach was to be very proactive. He opened the Yeshivas Volozhin, which is something that his Rebbe, the Vilna Gaon, never would have been able to do on his own. It's something that he just wasn't capable of doing. And here you find another one of his students, Reb Hillel Mishklov, who probably was the second most important Talmud of the Vilna Gaon. And you find that he was a very fascinating personality outside of his Torah learning. He did so much outside of that, as we will see. Hagvanim harabim halalu, all the different dimensions and aspects of his life, hismazgu b'ishiyuso legavan zoher echad, they all came down to one bright light, lekeshas tzvaim harmonit muflet echad, that they all came to one beautiful rainbow in his life, and the amount of influence that he had as a result of his many dimensions of personality is something that should not be understated. Ushlemis ko gedola v'ilayis, and this perfection that he elevated himself to in his life, Hamakrina Azora Adorenu Va'adoras Rabim, is something that illuminates not only his generation, but it continues to illuminate many, many generations. And he writes, Ad She'anu Omdim Mishtomimim U'mishtoim, as we find ourselves being humbled and awed, Bifnei Anak Ruach U'maisazeh. We find ourselves awed in front of a personality who gave so much not only to his generation, but to future generations. Now, what did he give? We'll see in a few minutes. What did he accomplish is something that's very important.
Which writing would you read?
This is written by Rabbi Binyamin Mintz. So he wrote about, this is written in the introduction to the Sefer that Rabbi Yisrael Mishklov wrote. There were many contemporaries who wrote incredible descriptions of the lifetime of Rabbi Yisrael Mishkalov. Now you'll ask, what was so amazing? We'll see in a couple of minutes. The Chassam Sofer, who was also a contemporary, lived at that time, a towering giant, an amazing personality on his own, who was not really connected to the Vilna Gaon, but lived at the same time period as his students. The Chassam Sofer writes in a letter that he addresses to Rabbi Yisrael Mishkalov. He says, Kedosh Hashem, you are the Holy One, the one who is the Kedosh Hashem, Yidideinu Gaon Yisrael. You are our good friend who is Mara De'ara De Yisrael. You are the leader of the land of Israel. Now the Chassam Sofer didn't just throw around titles like that. He obviously felt that Rabbi Yisrael Mishkalov was that. And not only that, Chassam Sofer at a certain point in his life got involved in a whole discussion that was going on where money should be allocated to. There was money that was collected and there was a discussion, where should the money be given? Should it be given to this institution or that one? And it wasn't clear. And Rabbi Yisrael Mishkalov is the one who sent the question to the Chassam Sofer, and the Chassam Sofer responds to him as follows. He gives him such incredible titles when he writes a letter back to him. He says, Shalom Yisu Haharim V'Kavod Hashem. Greetings to the one who is carrying the mountains and who is the glory of the Ribbono Shel Olam himself. Karen Sadik Yarim, Ram V'Nisa V'Nigva Me'od, L'Nezer Teferes V'Hod. You are the one who is the glory of the Jewish people. Hagon Hagadol HaMefursam Nasi Elokim Be'eretz Nochachas Pakid Hanagid Elokim Al Kolel Prushim Dekilas Kadosh Tzva. So he writes to him with such incredible terms that he had such humility before the presence of Rabbi Yisrael Mishkalov, and he was surprised that they even sent him, the Chassam Sofer, a letter to adjudicate something that was going on when it was Rabbi Yisrael Mishkalov who was involved. So that's the kind of person that we're dealing with. And one very important thing that was a major focus of the life, one unique characteristic of Rabbi Yisrael Mishkalov, was that on top of all of his Torah knowledge, which was amazing, obviously, as we know, but he was also a tremendous advocate for very important causes and needs of his time. And some of those were the following. So, Rabbi Yamin Mintz writes once again in his introduction to the Sefer Pasa Shulchan, he says, this was one of the unique characteristics. Efshir lahagid bebitcha, he says, I can say with absolute certainty, Shalohaya kamohu shliach eretz Yisrael ba'artzos lita. There was nobody in the land of Lithuania. There was nobody in Russia or Poland, he says, Russia, Poland, or Lithuania, who was as much of an advocate for what was happening in Eretz Yisrael as Rabbi Yisrael Mishkalov. Now, you wouldn't normally associate the Gadol HaDor to be the one schlepping around and raising the money for the Jews in Eretz Yisrael who don't have any money. But he says, I can say with absolute certainty, there was no one in the generation in Poland, in Lithuania, or in Russia who worked harder and who was more successful at strengthening the Yishuv in Eretz Yisrael than Rabbi Yisrael Mishkalov. What did he do? Shehelhivu ko es halavavas leman Eretz Yisrael. There is nobody who influenced more people to be inspired about Eretz Yisrael. Sherabbi Yisrael Mishkalov lo bikesh nedavos. Rabbi Yisrael Mishkalov didn't knock on people's doors and say, I'd like that you should contribute. Hu daras trumos misim. He demanded that everybody needed to give taxes to the land of Eretz Yisrael. So he didn't just knock on doors and say, you know, it's a nice idea, good cause. No. He knocked on a door and he said, you have to give what we call today a horat keva. You have to give a tax, because the Yishuv in Eretz Yisrael is something that is absolutely important. It's critical for our generation. And he forced people to be involved. And he forced people to have a relationship with the Jews who were in Eretz Yisrael. And that was an incredibly important facet of his life. Hu lo bikesh nedavos tzedakah b'shvil aniyim. He didn't just knock house to house and say, we have needy people who can use your help. Rather, hu hofia b'shem ha'aretz. He showed up to people's homes and he said, I am here on behalf of the land of Israel, not on behalf of myself and not on behalf of individuals. I'm here on behalf of the land of Eretz Yisrael, b'shem idiyah gdola v'nisgava binyan Eretz Yisrael. He showed up at people's homes and he said, I have an ideology that I am preaching, and that is the rebuilding of the land of Israel, and you must contribute, you must be a part of it. And that is something that he was able, as we will see, to accomplish extremely successfully, and much of the Jewish foundations that we have in Eretz Yisrael from the 1800s came because of the efforts of Rabbi Yisrael Mishkalov. And that's why I thought it was appropriate, not only because we've been speaking about the Vilna Gaon and his Talmidim, but also now that we're entering into Chodesh Av and we think a lot about Eretz Yisrael, to think about who were the people who allowed us to get to Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Yisrael Mishkalov was certainly one of those personalities who created the foundations of the community in Eretz Yisrael, and it's worthy of thinking a little bit about him. So let's begin to appreciate and understand the legendary life of Rabbi Yisrael Mishkalov. So Rabbi Yisrael Mishkalov was from the town of Shklov. Now, the town of Shklov, you'll wonder, it was not so close to Vilna. So how did they end up? How did Rabbi Yisrael Mishkalov end up by the Vilna Gaon? The answer to that is, this was a community that had many great Talmidei Chachamim, but they also had many ashiru muflagim. They had many very wealthy people as well. Now, there was an individual in this community by the name of Rabbi Yamin Rivlin. Rabbi Yamin Rivlin was a member of the community of Shklov. He was a close relative of the Vilna Gaon, and therefore he decided when the time came, his family had enough money, so they sent him to learn by his cousin, to study under the Vilna Gaon. Rabbi Yamin Rivlin was so overwhelmed by the greatness of the Vilna Gaon, so he comes back to Shklov, and he says, you wouldn't believe it, my cousin, the Vilna Gaon, is living in Vilna, nobody's taking advantage of him, he's sitting and learning in his attic by himself, why don't we start a movement to get those who are worthy from our community to move to Vilna, and to start trying to learn whatever they can from the Vilna Gaon. And that is really how everything started. And it turns out after a number of years, there were so many individuals from Shklov who actually went to learn by the Vilna Gaon that the whole community became extremely influenced by the Vilna Gaon. One of those people who was pushed to move and learn by the Vilna Gaon was Rabbi Yisrael Mishklov. So again, as we said, Rabbi Yamin Rivlin starts this movement in Shklov. The first person that he gets to go is someone by the name of Rabbi Nachum Mendel Mishklov, who's not related to Rabbi Yisrael, but they were both from the same town. They both had the same last name. He was an incredibly important personality in the life of the Vilna Gaon as well, because he started to write some of the manuscripts of the Vilna Gaon after his death. So Rabbi Nachum Mendel Mishklov writes, let's say, the Gruz commentary on Mishle was written by Rabbi Nachum Mendel Mishklov. The Gra's commentary on Seder Olam, I'm sure none of us have ever even read the Seder Olam, but the Gra had a commentary on that. That was put together by Rabbi Nachum Mendel Mishklov. So that was the first of this movement. The second one was the great Rabbi Hillel Mishklov, also not related, but from the same town. He goes to learn and study under the Vilna Gaon. He writes a sefer that is very important for those who are into Kabbalah, but it is a very important sefer called Kol HaTor. That is where much of the Vilna Gaon's opinions were written about how emphatic he was about moving to Eretz Yisrael and how important it was that his generation be involved in the rebuilding of Eretz Yisrael. That was the contribution of Rabbi Hillel Mishklov. And finally, the third one who moved most prominently was Rabbi Yisrael Mishklov. Now, Rabbi Yisrael Mishklov goes down in history as one of the preeminent students of the Vilna Gaon, but what I find fascinating is, you would think, how long did he study under the Vilna Gaon? After all, you go down in history as the one who was Yad Yemino Shel HaVilna Gaon. You were the right-hand man of the Vilna Gaon, and you were the one who wrote so many manuscripts of the Vilna Gaon. How long did he learn by him? Rabbi Yisrael Mishklov writes about himself that he had the opportunity to learn by him for 6 months. That was it. 6 months. The last 6 months of the Vilna Gaon's life is all that he spent with him. And the last 2 weeks of the life of the Vilna Gaon, Rabbi Yisrael Mishklov is the one who was there. He never left the room, he said. He was there all day and all night. And he was the one who was present when the Vilna Gaon passed away. So for 6 months, that's it. 6 months was the time spent by Rabbi Yisrael Mishklov under his Rebbe, the Vilna Gaon. And he goes down in history as one of the most prominent students of the Vilna Gaon, which is a very fascinating insight. You'll think also about Rabbi Chaim Volozhiner. How long was Rabbi Chaim Volozhiner studying under the Vilna Gaon? Not that long either. It wasn't that long that he was studying under the Vilna Gaon, and in fact, Rabbi Chaim Volozhiner said that he only went back around once a year to present all of his questions to the Vilna Gaon. They spent about 20 minutes together once a year, and that was it. But Rabbi Chaim Volozhiner was so influenced by his relationship with the Vilna Gaon, and apparently it didn't take long to be influenced. He just stayed in the presence of the Vilna Gaon, and look what became of these incredible personalities. So Rabbi Yisrael Mishklov, after the passing of the Vilna Gaon, felt that it was his obligation to pass on the incredible legacy of the Vilna Gaon. And his description that he gives about his Rebbe is, Ke'echad midoros harishonim. He says, I consider this man, the Vilna Gaon, to be like someone from a previous generation. Chiber yosem yishivim chiburim. He says, my Rebbe, the Vilna Gaon, wrote more than 70 books. Ad hayoso ben arbaim. Before he turned 40, my Rebbe wrote more than 70 different books about different areas of Jewish life. Hayelo kuf gimel perushim bepasuk echad mishir hashirim. He had 103 interpretations into one pasuk in Shir HaShirim. That's the kind of life my Rebbe lived. That's the kind of person he was. V'lo nimtza ish sofer mahir. We weren't able to find a scribe sheyichtov kedaito. We couldn't find anyone who was able to write fast enough for the mind of the Vilna Gaon. So the Vilna Gaon was sitting there giving a shir, saying his 103 interpretations in a pasuk, and there was no one who was able to even write it quickly enough. And therefore he says, I felt it as an obligation upon myself, says Rabbi Yisrael Mishklov, to try and memorialize whatever I could, to write whatever I could about the teachings of my great teacher, the Vilna Gaon, even though it was something that was almost an impossibility. And he spent a lot of time. for anyone who learns Shulchan Aruch, on the side of the Shulchan Aruch we have what we call the Hagos Hagra. On every page in Shulchan Aruch, the Vilna Gaon wrote comments. And those are very cryptic, very short comments that many people have difficulty understanding. There have subsequently been written so many different svarim about the commentary of the Vilna Gaon on Shulchan Aruch because you got to be a genius to even figure out what it means. So the Vilna Gaon, that commentary was put together on Shulchan Aruch Arachayim by Rabbi Yisrael Mishklov. And that's an unbelievable contribution. That's something that's used until today. And without Rabbi Yisrael Mishklov, we never would have had that. So we owe him a tremendous debt of gratitude. He wrote that. He wrote not only that, he also wrote a commentary on Maseches Shkalim in the Yerushalmi, which is something that was very difficult to understand. There weren't many commentaries, but he wrote down what his Rebbe taught him about how to understand Maseches Shkalim. He also wrote an important work, a voluminous work, which was the Pa'as HaShulchan. The Pa'as HaShulchan is all about the mitzvahs HaTeluyas Ba'aretz. It's all about the various mitzvahs that are to be performed only in Eretz Yisrael. And that was a very important focus in the life of Rabbi Yisrael Mishklov. As we said, getting people to move to Eretz Yisrael, he felt, if we're going to get them to move, we also have to teach them how they should live there. And that's why he took it upon himself to write this incredible work called the Pa'as HaShulchan. The humility of Rabbi Yisrael Mishklov was something that was legendary in and of itself. We said that the Vilna Gaon was a humble person. Rabbi Chaim Volozhiner was somebody who, his humility was spoken about by so many others. But here you look at the way Rabbi Yisrael Mishklov introduces himself to others, and the way he writes about himself when he's addressing a letter to other people, the way he signs off, and you see his humility, you understand a little bit about what his life really was. He says, at the end of a long letter that he writes to one of his contemporaries, he says, this is written by the Torah Vahanodet, by the one who is distracted, who's not focused, by the one who is displaced, who doesn't have one place in the world. Kitzipor nodedas mikina, I consider myself like a bird that's flying around looking for a place to call home. Misavek ba'afar ragle chachamim, I consider myself someone who licks the dust of great people. I don't consider myself anything. I consider myself someone who just soaks up everything I can from great individuals. Eini v'libi sham kalayamim, and he says, I sign off as afar Eretz Yisrael. I consider myself as the dirt, the dust of the land of Eretz Yisrael. That's the greatest compliment I can give myself. And he said, I consider myself nothing greater than just that. I consider myself a part of the dust, the dirt of Eretz Yisrael. In his introduction to his Sefer, he actually writes, how am I a person who thinks I even have the right to pen a Sefer? Who do I think is actually going to read a Sefer of mine? Hine Eitzar Anochi LeYamim, I'm a very young man. I'm inexperienced. Nichsaf LeHisabek Ba'afar Ragle Chachamim, I'm embarrassed, I'm ashamed to even consider myself in the league of great people. Al-Kain, he says, therefore I'm nervous, I'm afraid. How do I have the right to even pen a Sefer? How do I have a right to write anything? When I know that I live in a generation where these great men, these great people, were Pihem Paschu B'Chachma LeSefer Echad Mine Elef Alfei Alafim. They wrote so many incredible novel, chidushim, on everything. He says, how do I even have the right to offer what I have to say? Do I think that it's even relevant? Do I think anyone's going to care? And he says, mi anochi, who do I think I am? Bar me'ish, I feel I'm a subhuman. Lo binas adam yeshli, I don't have any intelligence. La geshes ala kodesh penima, do I think that I have a right to even offer anything to the greater public? Hayitachin liyito shehu beramasim, do you think that a little ant should try to climb a mountain? It's a joke, he says. Sheyerav libo lo geshes mul hadras peneha ari hamelech hagadol shebechayos hagiborim shebechalashim. He says, how do I have a right to write anything, to feel that I have the opportunity to even give of my knowledge to the world when I live in a generation that just saw the Vilna Gaon, when I live in a generation that has Reb Chaim Volozhiner and the Chassam Sofer, and he says, I don't consider myself on par with any of these, and he certainly was. So as we said, aside from the publishings of the Vilna Gaon Svarim, which were very important for him, and that was something that he successfully was able to accomplish, to put together all of those writings, but one very central theme in the life of Rabbi Yisrael Mishklov was the Aliyah movement to Eretz Yisrael. And that was something that was a very important part of his life. So the story begins as follows. From the year 1777 to 1808, the Aliyah movement began. What's interesting is it didn't begin with the students of the Vilna Gaon. It actually began with their rivals. It started with the students of the Baal Shem Tov. So you have to appreciate what's happening. At the time, the Vilna Gaon was a staunch opponent of the Hasidic movement. The Baal Shem Tov was leading his community. He was the head of the Hasidim. The Vilna Gaon was leading his community. He was the head of the Misnagdim, who lived in Lithuania. Now, the two of them were two great individuals. They were very much at odds with each other. And both of them had this idea that we have to send people to Eretz Yisrael. The one who was able to successfully begin the movement was the Baal Shem Tov. So he sends for 30 years, from 1777 to 1808, he has a number of families from his followers who are moving to Eretz Yisrael, and they all go to Tveria. Why do they move to Tveria? So they base that on a Zohar. Why are they not moving to Yerushalayim? Why are they moving to Tveria? So they base that on some passage in the Zohar, that for some reason they assume that Mashiach is going to come from somewhere in Svat, Tveria area, and that's why the Hasidim chose to live in Tveria, because they said they were going to be the ones to greet the Mashiach. So that's what happens. For 30 years, you have the students of the Baal Shem Tov are moving to Tveria, and they're building up the community in Tveria with many, many Hasidim. 30 years go by, and the Vilna Gaon's Talmidim decide it's time for us to catch up. And they were very much influenced by, how paradoxical it is, but they were very much influenced by the students of the Baal Shem Tov, who they couldn't stand, who they had no respect for at all, but because there was a relationship that was developed between those who were living in Eretz Yisrael and the Jews who were back in Europe, so the students of the Vilna Gaon realized this is something we can do. So there, it really went in three different installments, in three different groups. The first group goes in 1808, which is 30 years after the movement began. In 1808, the first group begins to go, and they are led by Rabbi Nachum Mendel Mishklov. As we said, he was one of the important figures in the lifetime of the Vilna Gaon. And he writes a letter back to the Jews in Europe about his experience living in Eretz Yisrael. Now, where does he move to? Naturally, where would you say he would go? He should also go to Tveria, because, after all, he knew the same passage in the Zohar. He also wants to be the one to greet the Mashiach. He doesn't want the Hasidim greeting the Mashiach. He thinks the Mashiach should be greeted by him. So he decides he's also going to go up north. He goes to Tveria. He realizes it's not going to work. The Hasidim and the Misnagdim, it's not going to work. The community is too small. So he moves to the next town over, to Tzvat. So that's how Tzvat gets built up. Tzvat gets built up because here you have this great towering figure, Rabbi Nachum Mendel Mishklov, who first tried to go to Tveria, realized it wasn't a good idea, and takes all of his followers, about 40 families that he brought with him, to Tzvat. Now you have to understand, there was no parnasa for them. There was no way for them to support themselves. They had no money. They got into agriculture. They didn't know what they were doing. And there was terrible poverty at the time, and it was very difficult. So he sends back letters to the Jews who are back in Lithuania, and he says, look, we're doing it on behalf of all of you. We're the ones who are giving up so much of our lives to try and build up the Yishuv in Eretz Yisrael. You got to help us out. You have to do whatever you can to assist and to make sure that this goes properly and that it's a positive upswing in those who are willing to come and join us here. So that's what he sends back a letter, and he writes the following. Why did I move to Eretz Yisrael? He writes back to the Jews who are back in Lithuania. He says, "Vativar e shalheves hakadosha," because I had such a fire in my soul that was telling me I should go. And what was that fire? It was Avas Tzion v'chibas Yerushalayim b'kirbenu. Because myself and my friends, these 40 families, all followers of the Vilna Gaon who decided to go with me in 1808, all of us felt this burning desire for Avas Tzion v'chibas Yerushalayim. So you'll ask, yeah, you have such a love for Yerushalayim, so go move there. Well, the answer is, they felt, yes, we love Yerushalayim, but we had a reason to go to Tzvat, we had a reason to go to Tveria, because we felt that's where the Melech HaMashiach is going to come from. Ulehis Ora, and we decided to reawaken ourselves, Bitzara de Shchinto Kadisha, because we feel bad. After all, God is all alone. Nobody's really paying attention to Him. And therefore, he writes, we felt an obligation to go out of our way, even though it's going to be poverty-stricken, even though it's going to be difficult to be living there. We decided to take the leap of faith and to move to Eretz Yisrael and to do it, even though it's hard. Why is that? Le'ukma Shchinto Kadisha, Limtza Manoach Lekaf Ragla Bebeis Midrashena. We wanted that God should feel comfortable, that God should restore His presence in Eretz Yisrael. And the only way that was going to happen is if we once again build it up and create whatever has to be brought there. And he says he hopes that through the help of the Jews in Lithuania who are trying to assist in our community, he hopes that that is something that will continue to grow and people will follow. He kept on sending letters back and forth. And as a result of that, only a year later, in 1809, there's the second wave of great people who move, also followers of the Vilna Gaon. They also move to Eretz Yisrael to join on to this mass movement to Eretz Yisrael. And finally, within that same year, 1809 once again, Rabbi Yisrael Mishklov is the third towering figure from the Talmidim of the Vilna Gaon, who also brings a movement with him to Eretz Yisrael in 1809, and at this point they have about 150 families, which is a pretty sizable community. You have 150 families, means each one of them has children, each one of them has husbands, wives, grandparents, whatever it might be, and you have a nice amount of people who are now living in that community. In 1816, only 8 years after moving to Tveria, for some unknown reason, Rabbi Nachum Mendel Mishklov decides enough is enough. Time for me to move to Yerushalayim. Why am I neglecting Yerushalayim? I know the Zohar says that the Melech HaMashiach is going to come from the north, from Tveria. But, after all, Yerushalayim is Yerushalayim. How can I not pay attention to Yerushalayim? And he decides he's going to move to Yerushalayim, assuming everyone's going to come with him. He moves to Yerushalayim. Everybody else stays behind. And once he moves, Rabbi Yisrael Mishklov now becomes the leader of the community in Tzfat. And that's where everything really began. So, they had an incredible love and affinity toward Yerushalayim and to Eretz Yisrael. And this was something that really guided their lives. And they kept on sending letters back to the Jews who were not yet able to come to Yerushalayim or to Eretz Yisrael. One of the letters that the great Talmidim at the time wrote was, it's so moving when you read it. They said back to their friends who were still studying under the Vilna Gaon, the Vilna Gaon already had passed away, but those who were still influenced by him. Ha'eretz mivaseres, they say, the land is talking to us. Ha'eretz misoreres, the land is awakening our spirit. Eretz maloshon omeres, you'll ask, what exactly is the land saying? What are we hearing? What are the communications that the land is giving over to us? So they said, we hear the whispers of Eretz Yisrael saying the following. Zacharti yamim hayisi mamleches gaveres. I remember the days when I was a powerful community, when I was the place where everyone wanted to go. B'yad Hashem ateres teferes. God Himself rested His presence in my land. And that's something I remember, said Eretz Yisrael. Gam ata bi lo shum davar necheseres. There is nothing missing now either, even though there's no Beis HaMikdash, but I am still here. Bi ha-Torah mizbareres. You come to my land and you will have a clarity in your understanding of Torah. Bi ha-Yira mizgaberes. If you come to my land, if you come to Eretz Yisrael, you will have a heightened sensitivity toward Yira Shamayim. Bi ha-Neshama mishtachreres. In my land, in Eretz Yisrael, your neshama feels that it is free. It is not in shackles. Me'avonoseh ha'chakukim be'ed barzel ve'oferes. Sometimes we get so caught up in the shackles of being in Galus and what that means for all of us. And Eretz Yisrael speaks to the Talmidim of the Vilna Gaon, and they said this is what they feel, that our neshama is free when we're there. U'ma'adua anish chachores. Why am I left all alone? Why am I abandoned? I'm considered like a woman who has no children. I'm considered like a person who's been left alone, like an old grandparent who nobody cares about. They leave him in the nursing home and nobody comes to visit. That's what I feel like, says Eretz Yisrael. Halo ani Eretz Chemda, am I not the cherished and beloved land? Chemdas ha'elyonim v'atachtonim, I'm the beloved of not only the Ribono Shel Olam, but I was always the beloved of the Jewish people. So what happened? Tova b'shnei ha'olamim ha'mezumanim. I am greater than anything else in this world or the next. Madu ani mushpeles l'chol davar shebikdusha. How am I sent to be the last piece that anyone thinks about? When you think about lofty ideals, how many of us think about Eretz Yisrael, they write? Lios acharon shebe'achronim v'lo rishon shebe'rishonim. How am I not the first in every conversation that one ever has about Jewish topics, about Jewish life? How am I not the first part of that conversation? How am I left to be Acharon Sheba Acharonim? How can that be? And this is the letter that the students of the Vilna Gaon, after living in Eretz Yisrael, having 150 families, write back to all of their friends back in Europe. How can we abandon Eretz Yisrael? How can we just leave it there? How can we not do our best to encourage more people to come and be a part of the Yishuv? And that's how everything begins. When you get a letter like this, how do you not answer the call? How do you not either move or feel a important mission that you should at least support those who are there? At least you should be a part of it. And that's what we said before in the introduction to the Sefer Pa'as HaShulchan. They write that Rabbi Yisrael Mishklov didn't just knock on doors and say, we need contributions. He came and he said, I'm here for an ideology. I'm here because I believe now is the time that we need to build Eretz Yisrael. Now is the time to stop neglecting Eretz Yisrael. Now is the time for all of us to come en masse, to build up Yerushalayim, to build up Tzfat, to do whatever we can to bring the Jews back to Eretz Yisrael. And this is something he successfully was able to accomplish. And he brought so many Jews there, and that's why the influence of the Vilna Gaon in Eretz Yisrael is something that is palpable. So many towns, so many communities follow the Minhagei Agra. You go to Eretz Yisrael, so many shtiblach, so many shuls are following the practices, the traditions of the Vilna Gaon. That all happened because they were really the ones in the 1800s who began this movement, together with the Hasidim who, again, had their movement in Tveria, but they really were the ones who influenced so many others to come and be a part and invest and be involved in everything that was happening there. The Pa'as HaShulchan writes about himself that he went through so many hardships in his years in Eretz Yisrael, and it wasn't easy for him. And it was extremely difficult, and there were so many obstacles. He says, Eretz Yisrael chaviva li tuva. He says, with all those obstacles, I love Eretz Yisrael more than anything else. And I never stopped pushing for that goal of getting more people to come to Eretz Yisrael, and it didn't matter how hard it was. Biyisurim rabim amdali. Yes, I went through incredible hardships and unbelievable obstacles that had to be overcome, but I did it all with love. Asher zachisi listapeach benachlas Hashem. But I still had the opportunity, with all those obstacles, with all those things in the way, and with all the things that seem to have gone wrong, and you'll see in a minute what went wrong, but he says, I still feel that I had the incredible gift, the unbelievable opportunity, listapeach benachlas Hashem, to consider myself one of those who took advantage of the land of the Ribono Shel Olam, be'afara, and I was able to roll around in its dirt. Zeshiva ve'esrim shana, 27 years I was able to take advantage of living here. V'harbe nisyasarti, and I suffered so much as a result of my being in Eretz Yisrael, but every minute of it was worth it. And you think about how much people suffer in Eretz Yisrael today, and you look at all the terror attacks, and you see what's happening, and we look no further than this past Shabbos. Such an unbelievable, atrocious crime that was committed. And I guarantee you, you ask those families, would you ever want it any other way? Would you ever want to move out of Eretz Yisrael and come to Chutz Laretz? I guarantee you they will all say no. And that's something the Pa'as HaShulchan taught all of us. All of the suffering, all of the Yisurim, all of the obstacles are worth it because we have the opportunity to live in Eretz Yisrael. I've met with so many people who have been through terror attacks, whose families have been ripped apart, have been destroyed. And you talk to every single one of them, it is never, never, never a part of their lexicon to say, we would rather live in Chutz Laretz and not have to suffer. They'll take the suffering. And obviously it's something we don't wish upon anyone, and we hope will stop. But it's something that the Pa'as HaShulchan writes, he was willing to endure also. And it's something the Jews ever since have been willing to do just for the land of Eretz Yisrael. He writes back to his friends, V'kama hisrapkos, he says, how many setbacks I had, miyom shebasi, from the day that I came here, setback after setback, one thing after the next. His wife passed away. And then in Tzfat there was a earthquake that took place. That was in his lifetime as well. And he says the whole community was wiped out. And he writes, some of his community members wrote about that earthquake. An unbelievable thing. They said that at that earthquake, they believed there was never anything that happened to the Jewish people as great as that. Miyom shenechrav hamigdash, from the day that the Beis Hamigdash was destroyed, lo haya churban kamo. That's the way they described the terrible thing that took place in Tzfat at that time. One setback after the other. There was an epidemic that went around. His whole family was wiped out as a result of it. He goes onto the roof. He writes. He cries out to the Ribono Shel Olam. He says, what are you doing to me? You're destroying my whole life, my whole family. Everybody was taken away. I gave so much for you. Here I am trying to build up the land of Israel. You killed my wife. You killed my children. And now I'm going to die from this epidemic also. He stands on the roof and he makes a promise and he says, I promise you, if you will make me not lose my life in this terrible epidemic that we're suffering now in the community of Tzfat, I promise that I will do something that will encourage others and will facilitate them to live in Eretz Yisrael. I will write a book that is a compendium of all the mitzvot hatluyos ba'aretz to make it easier for people to live here properly. And that's the promise that he took. And he says immediately after he took that promise, he felt better. Him and his daughter's lives were saved, and they continued to live on. And later on in his life, he fulfilled that promise. And he wrote this incredible compendium called the Pa'as HaShulchan, which is something that was a very important work for those who were planning to live in Eretz Yisrael. They didn't know how they should keep the laws of Shemitah. They didn't know how they should keep the laws of Trumas and Maizos. Nobody ever taught them. The Shulchan Aruch doesn't talk about this because it was never relevant in the days of the Shulchan Aruch. Nobody was farmers in the days of the Shulchan Aruch, and nobody lived in Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, this is something that he contributed, which was a very important contribution, but he went through so many hardships. And he writes about the pachad. He wrote about the fear that he had living there. The dever. He wrote about the epidemics, the rav, the starvation, the hunger that his community went through. He said, all of those we endured, but we endured it with love. And it's something we would never turn back and say, we want to go back to Vilna. We want to go back to Shklov. We're happy and we're proud to be the ones to be building up Eretz Yisrael. It's something that I would never trade in for anything else. And it's something he was so proud of and so successful at. I'll close with just one final thing, and he says, there was a letter that he carried around with himself that his friends sent to him when they came to Eretz Yisrael. And this was a letter that really inspired him to go on the movement and to become a part of it. So they wrote to him, Emes ma nehedar yeshivas ha'aretz hatova. How beautiful it is this yishuv, this life that we have in Eretz Yisrael. Emes manifla chibas artzenu. How overwhelmingly proud we are. How incredible it is, the love that we feel to the land. It pulls us. It's like a magnet. Emes manoa kadosh ziv hadar yeshivasav alichasa. We feel holy as we walk in its streets. Shavta v'kimasa. Every time you stand up, every time you sit down, you just feel an overwhelming sense of purity. Shalvasa v'shlemusa. We feel a sense of completion. When we come to Eretz Yisrael, it's like we're filled in from all of our gaps in life. Gam b'churbana ein dimyona. Yes, it's true that Eretz Yisrael is destroyed, and yes, it's true we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, and yes, it's true we're missing so much from what we hope to have. However, he says, gam b'churbana ein dimyona. Even in its destruction, there is no place in the world that is even close to what Eretz Yisrael is. Bishmamasa ein kamosa. With all the desolation that we have suffered, with all that we have seen, with all the destruction, together with this terrible earthquake that took place, with everything, with all the poverty and the hunger, he says, Bishmamasa ein kamosa. Even with all of that, ein kamosa, there is nothing like it. Tov afara v'avaneha. It's just, it's dirt and its stones are greater than anything else in the world. Tov tivuaso peroseh v'yarkoseh. Its fruits, its vegetables, its produce. Tov zechus avirasa. Its air is so pure and so beautiful. Tov hasagas toroseh. We have the ability to have a deeper understanding now that we're there. Tov ribui mitzvoseh. We feel blessed and honored that we have the opportunity to perform more mitzvos now that we've come to Eretz Yisrael. Mitzvos that we never had the opportunity to do in Chutz La'aretz. Tov taharas kedushaseh. We feel that there's a kedusha that emanates from the land, and it's something that we're able to feel and we're able to appreciate. Eretz shemeseh chayim. It's a land that even though there are many that are buried here, but we feel their influence. They're alive. Yes, you go to Tzvat and you see kvarim after kvarim, and you go to Yerushalayim and you see so many cemeteries, but they said it's an Eretz shemeseh chayim. It's a place where the people who are buried there are still alive, and we feel their influence very powerfully. HaTorah Shibcha B'Rabba Shibachah. It's the place that the Torah gives such incredible accolades to. The Torah always describes Eretz Yisrael in such incredible terms. HaTorah Rimema Barov Rimemoseha. The Torah goes so out of its way to overemphasize the greatness of Eretz Yisrael. U'miyucha Lefar Gadol Pe'er Hamalka B'chol Chalakan. Who can ever really estimate and evaluate the incredible gift that it is to live in Eretz Yisrael? This is part of the legendary life of Rabbi Yisrael Mishklov. And he gives over to all of us that we should have a sensation, we should have a feeling. And certainly in these days when we're on the precipice of a Tisha B'Av and a Chodesh Av, and it's a time that is a Zman of Avelis, it's a time for us to think about the Churban. Let's think about the Churban that was back then. Let's think about the Churban in the 1800s, and let's remember that they gave so much up just to begin the Yishuv HaChadash in Eretz Yisrael. They gave so much of themselves. They gave so many family members. They were poverty-stricken. They were hungry. They were starving. They lost so much in epidemics, and they had nothing that was really keeping them there other than the fact that they had such a love, a boundless love for Eretz Yisrael. And that's something that should really guide all of us. We have so much that we feel we cannot give up by going to Eretz Yisrael. But we look at all those over the generations who have. And if we ourselves feel that we cannot go there right now, at least we need to be people who are invested in every way that we possibly can in those who are doing it. It doesn't just mean sending money everywhere. It means you have to invest of yourself. You have to emotionally invest as well. Give chizuk to those who are there. Look at all the people who are suffering as a result of the sacrifice that they made to be in Eretz Yisrael. And there are unfortunately so many. But what, as Jews in America, are we doing to show them that we really care, that we really are there, and that we're always going to be there, and that we will have an active part in everything that Eretz Yisrael gives? I'll just close with one comment that I made yesterday by the Shir, and it's, I think, a beautiful comment of Rav Soloveitchik, where he said, the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, that Hillel made a comment which seems to be a very inappropriate comment. Hillel said, Ein Mashiach liYisrael. Hillel said, there is not going to be a Messiah for the Jewish people. And the Gemara says that the contemporaries of Hillel found that to be a very egregious error. How can you say such a thing? Don't you know one of the principles of our faith is, Animamin Be'emunah Shleimah Be'vias HaMashiach? We believe that there's a Mashiach. We believe there's going to come a time of a Geula. How could Hillel say such a thing? And his contemporary said about him, Sharele Mare LeHillel. God should forgive Hillel for the terrible mistake that he made by saying such a thing. How can you say Ein Mashiach LeYisrael? So Rashi picks up on this issue, and Rashi comments, you cannot ever imagine, you cannot assume that Hillel said there's not going to be a Mashiach. Of course he wouldn't have said that. Who can ever say such a thing? All Hillel meant was, Ein Mashiach LeYisrael means we don't want to have any human intervention in the Messiah process. We want that God should come Himself and save the Jewish people, and He's going to do it without any hands involved, without any human involvement. We want God to show us niflos. We want Him to show us the incredible greatness of His power, and we want Him to do it alone, to bring the Kibbutz Galus and the Mashiach by Himself. We don't want anyone else to be involved. That's what Rashi says Hillel meant when he said, Ein Mashiach LeYisrael. We'll ask Rav Soloveitchik if that's the case. Why were his friends offended by the comment? Isn't that a beautiful thing to say? I want the Ribbono Shel Olam himself, B'yad Chazak of Izra Netuya, the same way he did by Yetzias Mitzrayim. Why is that so offensive to say, we don't want anybody else to be involved, we only want the Ribbono Shel Olam himself, and Rav Soloveitchik so beautifully wrote. The answer is because there is no such thing as a geula, as a redemptive process that will happen without human intervention. Part of that process is that we need to be involved. We need to make it happen, either by going to Eretz Yisrael or by supporting those who are there and making sure we give everything we can to show the people that are there who are sacrificing of themselves so much, personally, emotionally, monetarily, everything that they give up to be there, and they sacrifice to be there, and to live, and to make the Yishuv stronger, and to make us have a country that we so love to visit and be a part of. We have to be a part of the redemptive process. And that, said Rav Soloveitchik, is something, if you think otherwise, it is an offensive comment to the Ribbono Shel Olam himself. He wants all of us to be involved. To say, Ein Mashiach LeYisrael, God's going to do it on His own? Absolutely not. God expects all of us to be a part of that redemption and to be an integral part of that redemption. And if we can't understand that, says Rav Soloveitchik, the Geula will never come. Because that's what Geula means. Geula means that we need to have a part in all that we expect to happen. And without our involvement, without our intervention, it will never happen. And that's where the Gemara says, Sharelei Mari LeHillel, God should forgive Hillel for saying such an offensive comment, because we need to be a part, just like Rabbi Yisrael Mishklov was a part, just like the Vilna Gaon pushed all of his students to be a part of the Yishuv in Eretz Yisrael, and just like since then we have suffered so many calamities, and so many individuals have gone through terrible tragedies, but yet they would never trade it in for anything because they feel that Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is such an incredibly important mitzvah and something that is so central to their lives, something that has changed the way that their families view the world, something that has changed the way they raise their children. And that's something they would never trade in, as much suffering as they might go through. And that's something we need to always be a part of, emotionally, spiritually, and mentally, to always show them that we are there for them, to show that we are mechazik them the same way the others who were living in Vilna at the time, who were living in Poland, were all a part of the Yishuv Haaretz. We all need to be a part of the Yishuv Haaretz as well and bring about the Geula as best as we possibly can. So